I'm Greg Mangum, CEO and founder of Only a Pavement Away, the charity that supports people looking to rebuild their lives through employment opportunities and careers in hospitality. Today, Only a Pavement Away has placed over 650 people into work, adding an approximate value of $35 million back into society and the economy. Welcome to our podcast series, Serving Success, where we will be exploring how this amazing industry is truly driving change, supporting people who wish to rebuild their lives and add real value back into society. Each month we will be catching up with inspiring leaders who have put people and purpose at the forefront of their businesses and their business agendas. So without further ado, we're delighted to introduce this week's guest, Lorraine Coates, CEO and founder of Be Inclusive Hospitality, who will be chatting with Mark Stretton, CEO of Fleet Street.
So Lorraine, thank you so much for being with us. Perhaps we could start by you telling us about your career in hospitality.
Yeah, sure. So it spans a little over two decades, so 22 years. I started my career in the pub industry specifically, but always in supply chain and procurement. And then most recently, I was responsible for the procurement department at the Wolseley Hospitality Group. So for the past 12 years, I have held exec board roles for likes of Gordon Ramsay, Corbin and King, or Wolseley Hospitality, and Shake Shack was part of the team that brought them to the UK as well. So very long career within the industry, working in all pockets of the industry, from pubs to casual dining, fine dining, a stint in hotels, contract catering, the list goes on and on. So yeah.
And then come 2020, mm-hmm. when the world was upside down,
yeah,
you set up Be Inclusive Hospitality.
I did indeed, yes. The business and idea had come to me some years prior, and in 2019 I'd made like a really firm decision to do it. But the one thing that the pandemic afforded us all was time and space. And so in the summer of 2020, I just really refined a business plan, decided on structure, and launched the business on the 1st of June. And then soon after, took voluntary redundancy from my then role and decided to work in the business full time. And so in hindsight, it doesn't really make sense, but it made a lot of sense to me at the time, and it still does. And I really enjoyed procurement, actually. I love procurement, but I really love what I do now more. So I think it was definitely the right decision.
And what was the why to make that decision?
Yeah, the why was my time in the industry, which has long been quite lonely. Over the years, I've made loads of friends and have contacts that I'm still in touch with over my career. But when you are of a kind of any minority background and you're constantly the only person in a room, it's not one of comfort that you feel generally. So long being the only person in any decision-making room, but also that extends to industry awards, events in the supply chain, supplier conferences, no one was having the conversation in the industry about it. In actual fact, all of my employers to date have always celebrated the diversity and talk about 86 nationalities and different races. And we, you know, we are all, you know, a diverse industry, which we are. However, it's a problem when people of particular races only occupy certain roles and then definitely not the highest paid roles in the business, and they're pigeonholed to a certain part of the industry. That is hugely problematic. And I always found that to be the case. But when you're alone in rooms, especially like in my 20s, I'm sitting there thinking, OK, that's interesting. It's been celebrated, but there's no one that looks like me in any boardrooms. So lived experience. And I would say this, I know the industry extremely well. I've worked at head office only, but always spent a lot of time in the operation, because in order to be really an effective buyer or procurement director, you've really got to understand the operation so that you're sourcing products and solutions to fit. So understand the industry really well. And I think that is why in many ways that we have grown at pace. Well, it's one of the many ways, actually. One is that we really understand the industry. So all of our service provision for the industry is from a really informed place. And, you know, really coincidentally, you know, like all of the team that work with us, either like on a full-time basis or otherwise, they are from the industry and know the industry. So, yeah.
In terms of service provision and sort of the aims and the objectives and what you do as being inclusive hospitality, can you just walk us through that?
Yeah, sure. I'll start by saying, like, mention my background's procurement, very commercial function. And in turn, I'm quite commercially minded. I always look at data, often use it to help inform my decisions. And when I started the business, there was no data at all. And so a big part of what we do, and this underpins everything actually, is research. So this started with a paper that was produced in partnership with a think tank called Resolution Foundation. And the first starting point was just to actually, let's understand the makeup of the industry from an ethnicity perspective and understand if there are any barriers that are visible through census data. Yeah, so that was our starting point. And that is where we arrived at the almost 18% of the industry are from ethnic minority backgrounds. From that point onwards, we've then run a series of surveys every single year, because it's really important when you're addressing an issue to understand the kind of wider societal context, but also understand the views and experience of those affected. So the Inside Hospitality report was designed to do that. So everything's data-led, and then the business falls into three categories. The first, which is around supporting the community, is around professional development. So we access either funding or sponsorship from brands to deliver anything from mentorship, qualifications, and we've done some work experience, but very limited, grant funding for 16 to 24-year-olds. We've done trips, wine education trips, qualifications. So the list goes on and on. And to date, we've supported over 2,000 people with access to professional development. And, you know, really positively, in the late 70s, percent of people that have accessed our programs have achieved their next step career goals or business goals. So we know it's effective and we know it's working. And we actually want to accelerate that to include like accelerator programs so we can better support people. So that's one part of the business. The second is we are technically an equity, diversity and inclusion consultancy. We refer to this function as education and resources. And the reason for that is with the research we've done, the conversations we have with partners regularly, we recognise that that's the biggest gap in the industry is around education and resources. So that is made up of anything from workshops. We do a lot of listening sessions and focus groups. We conduct culture audits, which in essence allows businesses to scrutinize their business from the outside and the inside. So it's like a desktop audit, but includes review of data, surveys, interviews, focus groups, so that businesses that are moving the dial forward on EDI are taking an informed approach from their current employer base and then implementing solutions for better outcomes. So we do a lot of work in consultancy. And then the third and final pillar of the business is around partnerships. So we collaborate with, not necessarily by design, but we do collaborate with a lot of global businesses to advance our aims whilst supporting theirs as well. So we work with anyone from Mars Foods to more recently Open Table. We've got like a ongoing partnership with them. And we are either a delivery partner or a collaborator. We have a very unique community in the industry, the only one that exists in the way ours does. So close to 1,000 people from a range of backgrounds, and we can filter by occupation, location, race, why they've joined the community, and we use that data to leverage all the initiatives we run. So that's kind of the three pillars of the business.
Yeah, I mean, there's a load of stuff in there. On the face of it, when you look at ethnically diverse representation, it's quite binary. So what is it that you're doing when you work with organisations on education and resourcing? Is it driving insights as to why people may not be progressing through organisations?
Yeah, it's a combination of education. So it's recognising the reality of the fact is that if you think about EDI as you would any other kind of core function of a business, in order for the leaders to move the dial on it, they need to firstly understand it. And when I think about the boards I've sat on, yes, my managing director or CEO hasn't been a procurement expert, but he understands it. And in that way, whilst I will have always like presented like the strategy or what we're anticipating to saving, he'll have views based on him taking an informed approach. And EDI is the same. I think that ultimately culture is defined by a number of things in a business, but leadership is a real core driver in the culture of an organization. If leaders don't firstly understand their part in the organizational structure and everything that is an output of structure, then it's really difficult to change. So the education piece starts with understanding the role of equity, diversity and inclusion in changing culture and how that's made up, their influence in it, providing them with education on bias, privilege, the historical context of why we're here. And a lot of the listening from teams is less so to asking them to tell us what the barriers are, but asking them to tell us what their experiences are in the workplace. And one of the reasons why the Inside Hospitality Report is open to all employees from all backgrounds and all career levels is because when you have all data, not only can you focus on EDI intersectionally, however that might look, but you can also draw comparison on different experiences, right? So it's very much multi-pronged. It's based on where we are here and now, what level of education in the businesses is available to take us forward, and what do we need to do to take things forward. And I say things like, when you think about gender equity, for instance, or gender equality, and the fact that whilst we're still not where we need to be, the sector has taken leaps and bounds forward in terms of that gender representation. And if we ask ourselves how that's happened or why, it definitely hasn't been an accident. So how do we take some of those learnings and apply it to different protected characteristics? Because I often find I'm in rooms where I'm having conversations about, oh, well, you know, we just don't know how. And I'm like, so how did you move the dial with gender? Oh, these are the things we did. So we educated our leaders. We were clear on where we were. We were clear on where we wanted to get to. We spoke to recruiters about ensuring that they had a gender diverse pipe. Like, all these things apply in this instance of race. However, the real distinct difference, especially around race, and it's why it's our specialism, is when people talk gender diversity, they're generally not talking about people that look like me. They're talking about people that don't look like me and that aren't ethnically diverse. And it is probably more comfortable for someone to say, oh, well, you know, if my wife was here, I'd want her to succeed and move forward. But how do we apply that same empathy to someone that probably doesn't look like you and might not look like one of your friends, potentially, or someone that you know? And so the huge part is learning, unlearning and learning. But the supporting that has to be like strategy and action on how we move things forward from here.
In terms of how we move things forward from here, give us a sense of the state of play. Where are we as an industry?
It's an industry.
What's
yeah.
the kind of progress report?
Yeah. It's so difficult because I'm always really mindful of this. You know, up until now, we've grown like year on year, which is great. But we work with probably, I couldn't even quantify, maybe 5% of the industry, if that. Like, the industry is huge. So we are working with a very small number of hospitality businesses in the grand scheme of the UK landscape, right? But what I can say is that 9 times out of 10, our partners find us, they outreach to us, and we're growing. So that, for me, indicates that there's more of an openness and a want to move the dial forward, which is positive. But what we also can't ignore is that most large businesses and brands shape the narrative that's out there about what they're doing and what they're not. So, you know, if you were to Google EDI in hospitality, you might find some press releases, you might find some initiatives. But for people that look like me, that's not their indication of change. Their indication of change is their experience in the workplace. So it's really difficult question to answer, to be honest, because we have some PR, marketing, that is around being visibly driving change. So I'm not going to mention the name of the company, but there's a particular company that any conversation I have in the industry, they're mentioned as, oh, they're doing loads of things. And from a press perspective, they absolutely are. But the key with community, and we tap into our community a lot to understand what's really going on in the industry, there's sometimes a disconnect between those that are talking loudly about what they're doing and people's experiences in those organisations, which makes it extremely difficult to answer the question, to be honest. And even the businesses that we work with some really great leaders who have some really great teams. It could take one person that's a leader in their business to not align to that. And then, you know,
yeah,
it's such a difficult one.
Well, like so many things, it's all about your manager, I
imagine. I know. It influences people's experience in the workplace, right?
Can we talk about the BS?
Yeah.
There is a lot of stuff that happens which does. I think some of it is unintentional, but there is performative stuff happening.
Yeah, there is.
And I think there is a desire and an intention to move to somewhere.
Yeah, I know.
But it feels performative because it's not backed up with action and like proactive steps.
You're right in that sometimes there's some performative actions that aren't intentional. But if you sit and look around the room and everyone looks like you and you're having conversations about what that change could be, that's something that you first need to start with. And And I'm not saying quickly go out and recruit someone that looks like you so there's objectivity in the room. Use an agent of change for that. You know, initially when we started this business, a lot of the work we did was around soundboarding, was around, especially for me, having like sat on a number of boards. So I understand hospitality, understand the context, and they needed someone with a different perspective to theirs in the room to have conversations. And I think it's just a really good starting point because people always lead with, and this isn't my personal stance, it's absolutely true, but it's just not my approach in that, you know, diversity of thought brings out diverse outcomes and objectivity. But it's really true that if you have very different people in the room from different backgrounds with different perspectives, the outcomes of an idea are going to be very different on that. What you had said, though, is around action and how that's backed up. If you just keep those two things in mind, then you're on a surer journey to not being performative.
Yeah.
You know?
Just keep it coming back to
measuring. Yeah, absolutely. And what impact are you really wanting to make? There's so many of the principles, like when I personally read like a ton of books, podcasts, and attended some courses myself on EDI, like there's nothing about it that's just not like very similar to like how you run a business or how you run any successful function. The same principles apply, but often people navigate around or away from it for EDI, which I just find really, really interesting. Like, we can do this, we can move the dial forward, but we don't want to have targets because we don't want to recruit the wrong people. But like when we set budgets for performance on business, we don't want to have targets because we don't know what, as an organization, the employees will do to achieve that target. We say, actually, we set the target and we ensure that all the metrics that support achievement of that target are the right ones. Sometimes we don't hit target. Sometimes we miss budget. But we take learnings from that, and that informs the budget the following year.
Yeah, totally. Mm. And it also, when you were speaking, it was reminding me almost of what we see at the moment in sustainability and ESG with greenwashing.
Yes.
And people making claims.
Yes.
It's sort of, can you please put sustainability down, marketing team?
Yeah.
It almost feels like the same with this.
You know, the thing is, so I often use sustainability as a comparison. And I also get, like, often there's well-intended on how do we best communicate what we're doing. And sometimes it becomes, it metamorphs into something that's a bit over and above what you're doing. But when we talk about sustainability, and, you know, I mentioned my background's procurement supply chain. And when I was, I can't remember where I was working actually at the time, but sustainability and has been on the agenda, on and off the agenda for years. Right, years and years and years. And then I remember overnight, literally, the industry switched from plastic straws to paper straws, like overnight, every business did it. Yeah. And this was after a while of kind of the industry dancing around their handbags as to what should we do on sustainability, what should we not. So this swift action was taken, it cost more for paper straws, but everyone decided to do it. And it wasn't an option for anyone to be an outlier, so everyone did that. And then what we've seen with time is like the emergence of like loads of forums that support hospitality businesses on their journey. And there's more knowledge in the industry. And there are some businesses that I know that are doing great work. And we partner with the Sustainable Restaurant Association. They do great work in the industry and I love their mechanic. I liken it to EDI in that maybe it's a journey that needs to be embarked upon. There'll always be people that are performative.
But we can look back on those straws and see how performative that was. We didn't quite appreciate it at the time.
Yeah, I know.
You know, if you're not putting biodegradable straws
into a biodegradable
process.
Yeah, exactly. There's just so much. It's super complex, as is EDI, but I think that there's a learning journey that the industry is going on in a very similar way. Mm. But I think that the core difference when I think about it is I've seen loads of research in recent times which talks about consumer expectation on businesses being more sustainable, and anything that the customer demands broadly is also going to drive behavior of the industry. And what I do know, there's a generation of hospitality employees operationally that will vote with their feet if they are in environments that are not aligned to their own values. But in terms of the customer doing that, I don't know if that will ever.
What if we're there?
Yeah.
In terms of 18%, how does that match up? Is that nationally representative?
Yeah, it is. So when when we first did this piece of work in 2020, it was overrepresentation. So at the time, from the last consensus, I think it was like maybe 13-14%. But with the recent one conducted, was it a year ago or 2 years ago? It's 18% now. So it's on par.
So, because one of my questions was, mm-hmm. you know, like Only a Pavement Away, you're fundamentally supporting the sector to pull from an underrepresented workforce or part of the workforce. But that's not actually the case, is it?
Yeah. And, you know, I always talk about the fact that diversity is not the issue within our industry. And I remember when I first looked at the data from Census, and I thought very similar to the NHS in terms of representation, high numbers of representation from ethnically diverse backgrounds. So hospitality doesn't have a diversity issue. It has an equity and inclusion issue. And I've never worked in a business where there's not been someone on the management team or the senior leadership team that started in the operation. So we know that hospitality is the type of industry that can also support career progression, but that only seems to be for some.
So what are the key barriers, as you see it, for those groups not progressing and not moving up the...
Well, I mean, I think my opinion is one person. I think the reason why we do the research is because data speaks really loudly. Mm-hmm. And when I was looking at, especially, we changed the question framing for 2023, but in 2022, 43% of Black, Asian and ethnic minority employees that completed the survey believe that their ethnicity has hindered their career progression. One in three have witnessed or experienced racism in the workplace. And then only two in five of the industry have had any education around cultural inclusion in the first place. So when you look at those stats, as well as there being disparities to access mentorship or career progression or qualifications, it all points to the fact that, and this isn't a hospitality issue, it's a societal issue, right, that people aren't treated the same, whether conscious or otherwise. If the outcomes look very different for particular groups, it begs a question as to why, because I know that the talent is out there. It's just they're not moving forward and upwards. And I guess the question we should ask ourselves as an industry is, what message do we want to send to not only people who are in the industry, that love the industry, that want to progress, but also people on the outside looking in that might want to join the industry? And that the message that we're sending is that we're not particularly inclusive. Mm. That's a fact. The thing with race, it's optics. You can see instantly. You can see.
It's right in front of us, isn't it?
It really is.
Let's talk about mentoring, because I know that's something that you do. How important is that in this situation?
Yeah, it's definitely part of the solution. And I say part because this issue that we're talking about is so complex and it's going to require so many levers to be pulled to change. The reason why we run a mentorship scheme is social capital and networks is something that is often lacking for women as well as minorities, right? Knowing networks, knowing people in the industry that might support your journey, sponsor you and help you move forward. As professional development is something that comes up really high in the ranking of why people join the community. We just felt really strongly about the fact that we have quite a big corporate network that we work with, or we know, or they support us, as well as community. So what that means is we're able to pair people who are keen to develop with like senior successful leaders in the industry. And we've got like a bank of about 100 mentors that volunteer 6 hours a year without a shadow of a doubt every year and support people to help them move forward and upwards. So we've seen huge amounts of impact as a result of that from people starting in one position and ending in another either a year or 2 years later, which has in part been their obviously hard work and everything else around that, but the mentorship has helped them to get there. So it's definitely part of the solution.
And is that something that you've experienced on the other side?
Yeah,
sure. Have you used that
access? I did. And they were never officially mentors, but early in my career, I had a woman or two actually that became friends, but they were about 10 years my senior. One in particular always really liked her because she was very good at her job as a buyer, purchasing manager, but lovely person, always laughing. And especially when I started out in procurement, it was very much viewed that you had to be like angry and assertive. Well, assertive is correct, but not aggressive. Like there was only one way to be firm and Sharon, who's still in the industry, Sharon Lowe. She's a lovely woman. She was always just really firm, fair, did a good job, but really nice, lovely human. So I'd say that she was probably my first, and she became a friend because when I joined the pub industry the first time around, it was my first time out of university. And then I joined rejoined 4 years ago later as her peer, 5 years later as her peer, as a purchasing manager. She was definitely one, and so was her previous boss, Alex, who was just amazing human, great leader, and saw in me what I didn't see in me. So I was a purchasing manager at the time. And he said to me, you know, why haven't you gone for a head of procurement role? And I said, oh, I'm not ready. And he was like, what are you talking about? You are ready. Like, he was just amazing. Stayed in touch with him long after I left that company. So I've had several, not in an official capacity. And none of them looked like me, but they were just great humans that I respected professionally and personally. And they also set the blueprint of how I wanted to lead, in that I have always known my stuff, make sure I know my stuff professionally. But actually, most people that work with me will tell you, like, you know, Lorraine's really enjoyable to work with and quite fun. And finding that balance has definitely been learned. I say learned. I gravitated towards that, I think, because that's who I am. Mm-hmm. But they always reminded me that you can be you and be great at your job and not have to flex and bend dependent on where you are. So,
yeah,
I have.
That's so important.
Yeah.
And I think if you're not having fun as part of your job,
definitely.
You need a new job.
Definitely. And I think that when I look at my previous job, procurement, had loads of fun. And in this one, I have loads of fun too. So, yeah.
That's quite an important message, isn't it, as well? Because it's quite a sort of weighty issue we're talking about.
You know, it's so interesting you say that, because people always say, oh, you know, how is it? You know, it's like a heavy issue. And 99% of the conversations that we have are progressive, celebratory, move forward. Like, we don't have, like, I say weighty conversations. We obviously look at data, and that can sometimes reveal issues and challenges. But whether with our partners, with our community, most of the work we do and the people that we work with, it's mostly spent looking forward. And that is just a really great feeling of we're able to be creative. We use data. It's around people. It's about hospitality. Like, all the things I love are involved in my role in this business. So whilst we were born out of a problem in the industry, it has just, like, built the most amazing community in this industry. Like, of businesses as well that I personally love and respect and would eat there. And it's never a coincidence that some of the disruptors in our industry that haven't been around for maybe more than 10 years, like, fairly new in the grand scheme of things, but doing great things and soaring, there's no coincidence when you meet their founders and who they are as people and how that lives and breathes in a business. And that's also a reminder around the messaging around culture, how that lives in a business, who it comes from. So yeah, honestly, it is weighty, but I really enjoy my job. Love it. Yeah.
I suppose one of the end goals is just helping a bunch of people fulfill their potential.
Exactly.
Can you tell us about the Spotlight Awards?
Yep. I've mentioned probably two or three times that I'm really data-led. When I thought about doing it in the first year in 2022, I did an audit, or someone in the team did an audit, looked across all industry awards, and we tallied race and ethnicity of winners. And the findings were that, like, less than 2% of all winners across multiple industry awards were of ethnic minority background, and like 0.02% at the time were black. Awards serve so many purposes, right? They make us feel seen and recognised when sometimes, you know, we're doing the work, and sometimes it can go unnoticed, either with our employers or the wider industry. But there's so much phenomenal talent in the industry that exists that you just wouldn't know about. Something I forgot to mention about what we do as a business, a big part is around amplifying voices. So we do features on our community, we do blog posts, we have panel discussions, we have a lot of events. And through our network, we have someone that was commissioned by the caterer to do some writing. We've had people picked up to do writing actually for a few publications. There are quite a few people in our community that have been found via our network. And because we recognise that the wider industry versus when we started is moving forward slightly, there's just still a breadth of amazing people that you just don't know about. We just don't see. So we started the awards to shine a spotlight, quite simply, on underrepresented talent in particular areas, whether that drinks, food, different cuisines, head office, team members. We've got 15 categories to shine a spotlight and to celebrate them. And it really is that simple. My hope is that whether the business or the awards in the future will needn't exist because the industry's caught up. And I would say over the 4 years, I have seen some progress. But at a recent award, someone congratulated me on my win, thinking I was Jacquet from Chisaru. And I think because we're probably the only two black women in the room, right? So, like, there's some way to go.
Yeah. Mm. In terms of companies and brands that are getting it right, delivering the change that we need, and making that, going on that journey, who are there? Is there anyone you would call out?
The reason why I wouldn't is because... It's so interesting. This morning, I sent one of our partners a message just to ask if it was okay to share something on LinkedIn, right? And I asked her because there's a number of businesses that are doing the work that don't want to talk too publicly about it because they're really mindful of doing it with good intentions and getting it right rather than being visible doing it. 9.9 out of 10 of the businesses we work with are kind of that way inclined. So I probably wouldn't mention them on this. But what I would say is what a lot of the businesses that we've worked with today are now becoming more willing and open to do, and we're doing more of this year, is speak about it on panel discussions that support the industry. And going back to April or May, Restaurant Show, they had a panel, which I chaired, and we had Hannah, who's the People and Culture Director at The Alchemist. We had Fernanda from Caravan, and we had Gemma from Hawksmoor, all of which we've worked with, talking about EDI really honestly from a point of they're on the journey. These are the things that are working well. These are the things that they're still working on, the more difficult to influence, like having a really candid and honest conversation about EDI. And the reason why I was really keen for them to join me is because we just want to kind of debunk the myth that you start the journey and in 3 months you're there. Like, it's a journey and it takes time and no one's going to get it perfect each and every time, but they're on a journey and they're being really open and honest about what they're doing. And the more of these conversations that we can encourage, the better, because I think honest conversations around EDI and what it really takes to move the dial is what's missing from our industry at the moment. I, you know, repeatedly hear businesses say, oh, you know, we've done huge things on women and sexuality, but we haven't managed to do anything yet on race. And I hear that, but what now? Unfortunately, there was a whole catalyst or awakening in 2020 around race, which in many businesses has now gone to sleep because it's not under the spotlight. But we're doing more and more of these with businesses that we work with, and that's their way of speaking publicly about it if they choose to.
And you can completely get that, can't you?
I do. And, you know, the thing is, right, all the businesses we work with are really people-centric, like really care about their people and want to do right by them. And they recognise that in doing right by them, they're doing right by the business, and they're nurturing a future pipeline of leaders. And so with being really people-centric, I personally think almost positively, they also recognise that the starting point isn't shouting loudly outside what you're doing. It's actually doing the work in your house, you know.
So I think you've been really frank, but you've also been very measured. And I get the sense you're keen not to put the boot into the industry. But there is frustration there as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we're in a safe space, you know, what would you say?
Yeah.
You've already talked a bit about this, but what would you say to everyone about, you know, it feels like we need to grab hold of this and start moving a bit quicker?
I think two things can be true at the same time. And I've always said this. Hospitality is a great industry. It's why I've worked in it for 20 years. I've met some of the best people, most passionate people. However, just look around any conference that you're in from a race perspective, and there's a problem that we need to address. It's really that simple. And my approach, my style works for some people and doesn't for others, and that's absolutely fine too. But what I'm saying is very evident in every industry event where there are leaders in the room, like very evident.
Thinking about Only a Payment Away and the work they do, we often talk about the amazing and massive but largely unrealised opportunity that this industry has to be an employer and be recognised as one of the best employers of vulnerable people.
Yeah.
We'd be really interested in your thoughts on that, but also how it pertains to the conversation that we're having as well.
Yeah. I believe this. I think that hospitality has the foundations to be one of the best industries for people from all backgrounds. And in being that, obviously the talent pool increases. What I'm always really careful not to confuse, though, is that the reason for EDI is because if you've got job opportunities or shortages of resource, they'll fill that gap. If we look at this either from an employee perspective or from sales perspective, right, look at it from both, why would you only tap into a proportion of the talent pool that exists? Similarly, if you're running a business, why would you only tap into a proportion of the customer base that exists for your product? Like, it makes absolutely no sense. I think about wine, champagne being two things that I'm really an enthusiast about and love. And up until 2020, I never saw an advert with someone that looks like me in those ads ever. And I'm like, what a missed opportunity, because whether your target customer has a particular earning and, you know, every obviously brand has a customer that can be described in terms of like whether that's their earning, where they live and all those things. But if you're only talking to a percentage of that audience, then surely that doesn't make business sense. Mm. And the same goes for talent. Why would you tap into only a proportion of the talent pool available? Mm. If you want your business to perform and you want the best. And so, you know, going back to the question you mentioned about discomfort and the why, it just all starts there for me. Like, how strong is the want and the need for your business or the industry to be genuinely an employer of choice versus you potentially having to invest time, sometimes money, into better outcomes for everyone? And I think the other thing I will add on that, actually, the reason why our EDI work is broader than race, it covers intersectional traits, is because EDI benefits all people. When you're looking at data about experiences, you can scrutinize it on every level. And if you're making an environment better for one, you're making it better for all, right? So it benefits the entire business. It's not just about always improving outcomes for that marginalized group. It's around how do we equitably support people, whether that's a learning need, whether that is lack of access to, you know, equivalent opportunities, whatever that barrier is, it's closing those barriers for your teams to perform. Understanding your people in particular is like the key to unlock great people that exist, but probably just might not have the tools that they need to succeed.
Thank you so much for listening. A huge thank you to our guest, Lorraine, this week's host, Mark Stretton, and of course, our sponsors, BrewDog and Stonegate, who without them, this wouldn't have been possible. Please do give us a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts to be sure you never miss an episode. Remember, without your support, we couldn't do what we do, and we want to do more. So keep your ears and your eyes peeled for next month's episode. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon.